Good evening and welcome to the Pinken Show, our dedicated Canaries shenanigans that is grateful we didn't have to push the need for a Teemu Pukki prayer mat. I'm Michael Bailey. We are here at the Woolpack Public House in the centre of the fine city of Norwich. We are live, and over the next 30 minutes or so, we will wrap up the remains of another lukewarm international break. Hear from the key players at Colney as City's training base redevelopment continues apace. We also hear from the Canaries' new COO. It's like a CEO, just further down the alphabet. And actually, prepare for some football this weekend. In fact, it's going to be a busy few weeks coming up. We will do this all in the company of this week's lovely lads. They are season ticket holder Chris Elliott and Forces to Canaries chairman Neville Townsend. You're still chairman, Nev?
Yeah, I haven't been ousted, but okay. It's still time.
It's always dangerous, isn't it, in that position? How are you both? You well?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, you?
Chris?
Yes, enjoying the international break. But real football's back Saturday.
Yes. Thank goodness. It's a happy time to be around. We are live at pinken.com and, of course, the Pinken Facebook page. And we want to hear from you too, be it on the work at Colney, your feelings on how the club is being run, and especially how City should tackle the challenge of an in-form Aita Karanka's Nottingham Forest, and whether the Forest boss is still haunted by turning up late to Wembley back in 2015. Probably not. But we might as well get the dig in anyway. You can get all of your comments through to us here at the pub. Simply post your words below the Facebook feed and they will ping right through to my iPhone. For example, Miles Hopkins says hello and hashtag OTBC. Paul Langshaw goes with an OTBC pinkin, like that. Alan Monument, we wait with bated breath. Sorry about the wait, Alan, but we have been longer. So there we go. David McKenzie, Stephen Taylor, give us a wave. And Hamish Jolly says hello. And lots of other people saying hello. And Alan Monument says coo, which I guess COO does indeed sound like a dove from above. Once again, let's start with the pub regulars holding their ears in protection as Wesley Moulahan, and Chris has got it, Onel Hernandez combine for this week's headlines. Start slow and build up. A Pukki precaution. Teemu comes off after just 12 minutes of his latest Finland outing, but the soundbites say it was only to protect against a proper injury. The boy is owed a rest, but for now, be thankful he's still fit and firing, and Finland won anyway. Kenny McPain. City's midfielder's difficult start since arriving in the summer continues with ankle surgery in a bid to finally ease his ligament damage. Let's hope we get to see him before December is here. Hooray, Henry! Jordan Rhodes and his wife Emma are celebrating the birth of their little sprog. Hopefully it won't affect Jordan's availability for Saturday, though. Congratulations, obviously, JR and family. And get him in the City Academy ahead of anywhere else. You'd think Jordan would have him at City ahead of Ipswich. Anyway, and finally, a Friday thanks. In 2 days' time, it will be 25 years since Norwich City's iconic, historic victory over Bayern Munich at the Olympic Stadium. What a time it was. Make sure you keep an eye on the Eastern Daily Press and pinken.com for some lovely stuff to mark the occasion. Thanks, Chris. 10 points. Gents, I remember getting carpet burns from doing a knee slide at the news that Norwich were winning in Germany. Can you remember where you two were?
I was serving with the Royal Navy down at RNAS Cold Rose down in Cornwall, so I watched on television. So I wish I'd have been there, but yeah, times are hard. So
I was watching on television as well, but much closer to home. I was in the Eton Cottage pub on Unthank Road.
How was the atmosphere?
Very good, yes. A packed house there.
Where does this all really sit in the club's history, do you think, the Munich stuff and that run? Because that, even from us advertising it, obviously Ipswich fans have chirped up saying we're not allowed to talk about any history. But, I mean, and in terms of other things Norwich have achieved?
It's a difficult one, really. It's not up there, I don't think, with the Milk Cup wins, obviously. I think they're above because you won something. But it's still up there in the top three, four, surely.
I think the Milk Cup wins are obviously going further back. I think ever since that, you know, since the last Milk Cup win, I think it is the biggest thing, and I think there's a few reasons for that. I think it was on BBC, if I'm not mistaken. It was pre-Sky and digital TV's domination, so I think it was I think for a lot of people around the country, if you ask them about big Norwich City occasions that they'll remember, I think a lot of them would pick that out, and they'll pick out one or two of the team, and they'll pick out Jeremy Goss. You know, football fans of all colours, I think, will home in on that as something they remember.
I mean, even if Norwich did get back into Europe again, it'd be completely different competitions, wouldn't they? Given that Norwich had to finish third to get into the UEFA Cup back then. Thankful for Timu. I mean, he does need a rest anyway, doesn't he, Chris? So, I mean, ultimately, I'm thinking it probably should dip him out on Saturday, but at least it's nothing bad, because, you know, these international breaks can have us worrying about these things.
That's right, because we call them a break, and for some people they are, but for him it's not. He's then jetting around Europe, playing every game, scoring in most of them as well, which is great, but, you know, he's played a heck of a lot of football, and he needs a break at some point. Now, you know, you could argue, maybe we will later, about whether he should have had it before he even went away. And you'll see my team later on is based around maybe we need to jiggle things around a bit.
Love a teaser, Chris, love a teaser. And Kenny McLean, I just want to touch on Nev. I mean, we saw him a couple of times early in the season. It's a bit unfortunate that the injuries come about as a kind of rough challenge against Stevenage. But Norwich obviously were hoping they wouldn't need to put him through surgery. And now that he's had to, it's probably going to be out, you know, another few weeks.
Yeah, I saw him pre-season as well in Germany, and he looked very useful. And like you say, the first few games. And it's a shame, you know. But I think you need him back just to, you know, have that extra option and put pressure on those that are playing, you know. So, because if they don't perform, then he's on the touchline to come and take their place, you know.
Awesome. Top stuff. Okay, well, Ian Gabelli and Carl Bedford have waved to each other on the Facebook feed, so that's always good. Well done, gents. And Craig Brown, the key to winning the battle against Forest will be trying to stop Daryl Murphy and Lewis Graban. If Closer and Zimmerman can stop these two, then hopefully Norwich can get the winning goal at the other end. I keep calling Nottingham Forest in form Nottingham Forest. Norwich are above them in the form table at the moment, so there we go. Right, last week was a busy one with the departure of Steve Stone, followed by, of course, the news that Stuart Webber, Zoe Ward and Ben Kensel will head up the club's new leadership committee. Don't know if that's the right term, but there we go. And today I got to speak to one of those key figures, Ben Kensel, about the changes and his new role.
From my perspective on Steve, personally, I think I worked very, very closely with Steve. We were across a lot of the different areas of the business. My job, commercial director, and his would work together very, very closely and would work almost effortlessly across the other areas of the business as well. So for me, it's a shame to see Steve go, but I want to continue some of the great work that he did. And perhaps also work on a few new things that I think the club needs to probably focus on as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that the new job title, a Chief Operating Officer, I think is the one, I think I've got it right. Where does that remit start and end?
Well, ultimately, it's about the non-football side of the business. We've now got a triumvirate of three, which is effectively Stuart in his similar sort of guise that he has been in, which is on looking after all of the footballing side. You've got myself on the non-footballing side, and you've got Zoe as a conduit between the two areas, working specifically on projects. And I think the key point to that is that I worked with Zoe for at least, I think it was about a year before Stuart even arrived in the business. So me and Zoe have that relationship. I now have a great relationship with Stuart and have had since he's been at the football club. So it kind of makes sense, and there's real clarity with our different roles and responsibilities. For me specifically, it's very much around the revenue generating areas of the business. It's also around what makes a football club, which is its stadium management elements to it, and all of the elements that come to putting a match day on.
I'm glad you mentioned about the new leadership team, because obviously Zoe and Stuart, husband and wife, and then there's you as well. And I'd be interested, I mean, there has been eyebrows raised a bit, of course, and I'd be interested what you would say to supporters who maybe have reservations about that dynamic leading the club.
Well, I think we need to be judged on results. So actions speak louder than words, if I'm honest, from my perspective. We've worked together quite closely for a period of time now, so this isn't a new relationship. I think there's real clarity. But it's hard to explain, obviously, without going through the different roles and responsibilities of each individual. But a collaborative working sort of environment is exactly what the owners wanted. It's what the board wanted. And if I'm honest, it's kind of in keeping with us as a football club. It doesn't really matter who is either in a senior position at the club or whether you are in a non-senior position. We're all working towards the same direction and the same goal and the same target. And it's to support Daniel Stuart and the first team, and to do our to do our jobs and be the best that we possibly can be at them. So I think sometimes too much is made of who's at the top of an organisation, shall we say, if we can put it like that. For me, it's not about that. It's about leading by example and creating more of a one team and one culture that's striving to be the best that it can be. And I think we can probably do that very, very well with the three of us, especially with Zoe between that being that conduit between the two sites now. We need to bring the two sites together. We need to feel like one club, and I think we can achieve that very, very quickly with the culture that we're creating at the club.
Which is between Colney and Carrow Road, I guess, because there's been a lot of work going on at Colney. So
yeah, massive amounts. And I think it's important to note, you know, Tom Smith came up with the original concept of the bond, which was game changing for this football club because it gave us an opportunity with the fantastic support of all of the investors, but in general the support that we have of the football club gave us an opportunity to really invest in our future, to define our strategy on and off the pitch, and from my perspective to really allow everyone at the football club, non-football and football, to get behind a project that we know will absolutely benefit our football club in the long term. Supporters, I believe, can now start to see it and the fruits of that labour and the products that come through it. But Zoe was a massive part of that, and Zoe helped deliver that project and that bond programme with the support of everyone else.
Final question. I'm sure you've got a to-do list. What's at the top of it?
Well, I think without pinpointing one specific priority, I think there are three or four, to be quite honest. We've got to continue the good work with engaging with fans. We want to support Safe Standing. We want to work with CSF and generate a greater relationship there. We've got to continue to commercialise our business. We've got to balance the books accordingly. Being a self-financed club, we've got to make sure that we generate the revenue required to give us the best opportunity to spend the money on the pitch. We've got to be more efficient as a business, full stop. But mainly for me, it's around how we're working together, and we've got great visions and great values at this club. We now need to start really living and breathing them and pointing everyone in the same direction and making sure that we can actually deliver on what we say that we're going to deliver and make people proud of the club, which I know that they are, but I think we can probably do even more in that sense.
Ben, thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there we go. I hope you guys found it interesting to listen to Ben Kensel. It's the first time he's done any speaking since he got his new job as Chief Operating Officer, which I keep trying to make sure I get right in my head. Views on the changes, gents? Because as you said, I mean, I did say it was a lukewarm international break, but it hasn't been a quiet one, has it?
No. Steve Gale was a shock. And then we all thought, oh, they'll probably bring someone in, but they've gone in-house and just promoted or got these three together and to form this new team. Ben been there a while, Zoe has been there a while at the club, so yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I mean, I remember Steve Stone trying to get me to shave my head for charity while my beard was being shaved off, which never went down particularly well. Paul Langshaw asked the question, why did Steve Stone leave? I mean, does that feel like that's a question that still hasn't been answered, Chris?
It does, and it's because you wonder what other ripples there might be, depending on what the reason was. Then you think, is there something still not right at Carrow Road that hasn't been fixed yet? You know, time will only tell. I think in terms of the new structure, it's kind of feels low risk because they've appointed two people who are already part of the club. Just slight concerns that the role has gone from being one chief exec to two and now to three, and that does need absolute clarity about roles, and they all need to be working really tightly together.
I guess the big thing is when you have collaborative leadership, you need people to still be responsible. That's always the tricky thing, and I'm sure the balance is there. And likewise, I guess we're going to learn a bit more when the AGM takes place, which will be at the end of November, and we've got the accounts that will be coming out probably in the next week or so, I imagine. So there's quite a few bits and bobs there that may throw a little bit more light on things. Is it a fragile positivity around the place as well, given the fact that Norwich have had decent form? That no doubt helps, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think there's a lot of positivity around the ground and at Colney, you know, especially with all the work that's going on there. But yeah, I think this is a little bit of a hiccup, and we didn't see it coming. But, you know, the king is dead. Long live the king. We move on and, you know, onwards and upwards, as they say.
Is there anything particularly catching your eye in terms of the what has happened, in terms of issues that you'd like to be addressed or that have may now go in a different tact in terms of Steve going, but you know, some of the changes.
It did concern me because it felt that we'd got real clarity over the last 18 months. You've got two guys in Stuart and Steve that seem to work hand in glove with each other, perfect symmetry in terms of football and non-football, and both, to be honest, looked like they'd be here for a long time, particularly Steve. Looked like a guy that was perhaps found a real niche that was fitting him. So it was a bolt out of the blue as far as I was concerned. And as I said earlier, that worries me that, you know, there's other things behind the scenes that aren't as good as that, or aren't as tranquil as they perhaps appear.
Interesting times. I'm sure, as I said, we'll hear more from the club over the coming weeks, given AGMs and accounts and all sorts have got to pop out too. Let's see what else you guys are saying. Craig Brown asks, will Teemu Pukki only miss one game? Well, we're not sure yet. Hopefully he won't miss any. But we'll be speaking to Daniel Farker at Colney. What day is it today? Wednesday. Friday we'll be speaking to Daniel, and hopefully he'll be able to fill us in with that one. Alan Monument reckons with the coup and the dove from above, that's me and Paddy being Norwich's answer to Reeves and Mortimer. Your thoughts on that, Nev?
What, you and Paddy being Reeves and Mortimer? Yeah. Yeah, don't give up your day job.
Yeah, that's fine, I'll take that. Could have been worse.
He could have said Ulrika. Yeah.
Car. A little one here from a couple actually about Nelson Oliveira, so let's touch on that, shall we? Hamish Jolly, who is our fourth choice striker in your opinion, Ida or Oliveira? Poor Dennis Trebaini doesn't look like he's going to get much match time, so would you loan him out in January to aid development? Paul Langshaw asks, why can't Daniel negotiate with Nelson Oliveira to get him playing? Is Nelson still a bit of an elephant in the room without wanting to, you know, label him an elephant?
He's training with the under 23s, isn't he?
Well, he was training with the first team at Carrow Road, and by all accounts, he's been training okay.
But he doesn't want to be here, though, does he?
I don't know.
I don't think he does. So if you're training with the under-23s, I get it. But if we're short on strikers, then you might have to then promote him up, put him on the bench. But is his mind right? Is his attitude right?
Okay, but this is interesting. I mean, would you? Because I've always got the impression that it's kind of Daniel doesn't want to play him. But what's your perception, Chris?
It's a wasted asset as we stand at the moment, and I think we're one injury away from needing him to be involved in the match day squad. Now, the job of any coach, head coach, is to get the best out of what he's got. Can't do anything about the squad, but if we're one injury, as I say, away from. I would want Oliveira on the bench, yeah, and it's the job of the club since the transfer window shut in August to have him as available as an option. We're just simply wasting money if he's not.
Quite a lot of money as well. It's quite a lot of money. So there we go. Right, many more discussion points to come. Make sure if there's anything you want us to talk about, post it out, or your opinion, of course, on the Facebook feed. Right, Dan, you know what time it is? Yes, it's Flip the Bird, the game that Neville and Chris have been looking forward to since the last time they did it, almost certainly. Last time out, Sarah Wilkinson and Connor Southwell didn't embarrass themselves on debut, although they also struggled to trouble the leaders as this season's competition begins to hot up. Nev will tonight aim to top his best score from last season, which was 5, while Chris Elliott featured in our top 5 from last season. And we'll hope he hasn't hit the wall at 7. So that's what you've got to beat. Not wishing to put the pressure on, but I do quite like putting the pressure on. You know what you've got to do. You've got 30 seconds to flip as many bar mats as possible, adding one to your pile with each successful one-handed catch. You don't have to go back to the beginning if you drop them. Afterwards, we'll do some sort of selfie with Wesley Moulihan, although I don't know if we've actually done that in the last few weeks. We'll do something. And other than that, the floor is yours. Look, you're both primed. Dan's ready with his watch. Go on then, Dan. Count us in.
3, 2, 1, go.
And away we go. 30 seconds. These two look focused. They've been quite quiet, quite calm, quite focused, it has to be said. They see this as a real opportunity to improve on what they did last season. Neville already grunting, though. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going well. He's not particularly focused. He's talking to me while he's doing it. Chris, though, a quiet, unassuming performance. He's just racking up the numbers. Neville's dropped another one. He's still talking to himself. Maybe I should get Neville to commentate. It'd be like one of those things where they talk to the boxers when they're in the corner of the ring.
Stop.
And that is it. Flip the Bird, done for another night. You do not get entertainment like this anywhere else. I think that's fair to say. Just as well, most definitely. Neville, what did you get? Count us through. Five. What was that? Is that the same? You've equaled it.
No.
Go on then, Chris.
Six.
Well done, Chris.
So a below par, but Chris wins again. Do you want to shake? Yeah, shake hands. Chris, did you do the first one of these? I can't remember. You did the first one of these with Adam Aitken, didn't you?
I embarrassed myself in the...
you didn't finish. You didn't finish, did
yes.
you?
Yes, but luckily I redeemed myself later on in the season. Yeah.
What a wonderful recovery since then. And Adam Aitken won and then also did the forfeit of downing a pint. Fortunately, we've come on a long way since those days. So there we go. Have we got the tea? Have we got the sting again, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah? Here's the sting again. Well, after all that excitement, let's spend a bit of QT with our guests. Chris, hope you're getting your sleeping bag ready. Do you want to tell us about what is coming up? It's next month, isn't it?
Yes, so I work at the Benjamin Foundation as my day job, and we've got our own fixture at Carrow Road on the 15th of November. It's our big annual fundraising event where we challenge people to spend a night outside, get a taste of what that feels like to be out on the streets, and that raises money to help us prevent other young people ending up on the streets themselves.
Well, yeah, is that the key task of the Benjamin Foundation, what it sets out to do?
Yeah, so we're a local charity. We work in right across Norfolk, and one of the things we do is we have a home for 100 young adults living with us. They're coming from broken families. They might be coming to us from children's homes, and we're providing them with the home and support, with their education, and then on into a career path. And that work just continues, and basically we're trying to break the cycle of homelessness really before it starts. So look after people, and you know, by the time they leave us, after maybe a year or two, they're often confident, young, independent people.
It's a big question, but does it feel like to you homelessness is more of an issue now than say it was 12 months, 2 years ago?
I think over the time I've done this role, which is 5 years now, there's been a huge shift. So when I used to go and explain about the Benjamin Foundation's work, even in and around Norwich, I think quite often I'd get met with a reaction of, is there much of a problem? Nobody asks that question anymore. I think whether you work, live, shop in Norwich, in King's Lynn as well. King's Lynn's got one of the highest growth rates in street homelessness in the whole of the UK. So I think you can't go to any town and city in the UK and kind of not pretty quickly see people on the street.
Now, last year you did this at Archant Car Park, didn't you? Just around the corner. We're quite lazy, by the way. We're literally just around the corner from work. And I can't remember what I was doing, but I was working. I was coming back. It must have been about 12:30, 1 o'clock. And I thought, oh, these guys are probably all, you know, up talking and shivering. I'll have a word with them. That'd be nice. Everyone was asleep when I got there, huddled up, which is probably sensible. Obviously, you've done it before. I don't know how many times you've done it. Please tell us. But how hard is it?
Well, I've done six of these sleep outs, and... yeah, I mean, you don't get much sleep, so we might have appeared. Some people maybe do, but I think it's really hard, and that's kind of why we do it in a city centre, is you realise why there's always distractions, there's always noises, there's always light, there's the cold, there's the damp. All these kind of things are things that people are on the street have to deal with. And, you know, those of us doing our event, we raise money, we get a bit of insight to that. But it's amazing how quickly, when the event ends at 7 a.m. the next morning, how quickly everyone dashes off home. Yeah. But you're left at that point with that thought of, I can go home to a warm house, a family, some hot food. And you're left with that thought of, what if I had to do this for another night and another night? I think you realise how quickly that would eat away at your confidence and ability to break out of that situation.
Neville, you're doing it this year.
I am.
Are
yes.
you looking forward to it?
I am looking
in
forward
a weird way.
Yes, I met Chris at the Royal Norfolk show and chatted. I said, right, I'll do it. I pushed it out to our members, and hopefully a few Forster Canaries members will take part as well as myself. So, yeah. But no, looking forward to it. It's worth it. Very good charity. You know.
It is indeed. So obviously the idea is raising the money. How can people contribute? Can people still do it if they want to, or is it closed now?
No, absolutely. Still looking to get a bumper crowd there at Carrow Road. So best place to go is the Benjamin Foundation website. You can sign up directly if you go to Eventbrite as well and just search for Norwich Sleep Out 2018. And all the details are there, or you can find me on Twitter or anywhere else, LinkedIn. But yes, love to get more people there. We've gone past 90 people signed up so far. Love to break through 100 quickly.
And what's the date again?
So it's Thursday the 15th of November. It's in the international break, the next one, which is why we can do it at Carrow Road. Yeah, maybe it's a quiet weekend of no football. So yeah, a different way to spend a few hours.
Well, Tom, great work, Chris. Good luck with it. Nev, Forces to Canaries, is it going okay? How's it? Because there's a few supporters groups around, aren't there? They each have their own little their niches.
Yes, yeah. I was obviously based around the Armed Forces. We have members about 175 members spread around the world, really, and a lot of them are in this country, but again, not Norfolk based. But we've just had our AGM. I'm still chairman. I wasn't voted out, so I think more to the point, no one else wants to do it. So we had a good meeting and a good meal and got thrashed out a few ideas. And since then, we've published a survey for our members asking them what they want, what can do, blah, blah, blah. So the returns on that are rolling in slowly but surely.
I was going to say, well, I mean, In a supporters club, what do you tend to find people's main issues are, or the things that as part of the club that they would like resolved or in dialogue with the club?
Ticketing issues, I think. Things like away travel has come up. But ticketing issues sometimes for the bigger games, getting hold of tickets. Us, really, we're social. We get together beforehand and we do take part in the events and that, but we'd like to do more, and that's what this survey's about, asking our members what they would like from us and what we could do and more on the charity side and things like that. But yeah, it's issues for the club. We'll see when I'll get all the survey results back, to be fair.
Well, let us know. Keep us in the loop. Yes, well, that'll be good to know. Right, a quick reminder that the show does have its own Norwich City notice board, ready for your weird, wacky, wonderful, and in some cases actually important bits and pieces you may want to know about. And a reminder for you this week, of course, the Norwich City Fans Social Club are holding their Pride of Anglia quiz on Thursday, October the 25th. That's at Carrow Road, including the chance to quiz Darren Eady, Grant Holt, and Terry Butcher. For more details, visit ncfsc.co.uk. And of course, that event is raising money for the Community Sports Foundation, so a very good cause. And if you have any tweets, stories, events, or groups of a Norwich City Canaries nature that you want to flag up here on The Pinken Show, then let us know via all the usual social media channels, or you can email thepinken@archant.co.uk. So, what of Colney, I hear you ask? Well, after all, it's been almost 8 months since the launch of the Canaries Bond Scheme that crystallised Norwich's training ground plans. Well, I popped in on Monday to have a look at how things are progressing and, maybe more importantly, speak to the key figures in charge of earning success on those lovely new pitches. Well, this is Norwich City's Colney Training Centre. It's in the middle of its £5 million refurbishment work. We've got new pitches over there and a new 500-seater stand that's going to be plonked in behind me, alongside young players getting new contracts and playing regular first-team football. It's fair to say, it's a bit of a buzz around this place at the moment.
Well, I think we built this for us. So we've utilised every bit of space that we've got. But I think the second thing is, or the most important thing is, it's purpose-built. It's not lavish. It's going to be, it's not going to have things it doesn't need. Some of the spaces are going to be dual-purpose. So we've got a classroom that's going to be a media centre that's also going to be for Daniel as well. It's going to be first-team orientated with some of the stuff. So we've built it with a practical sense in mind.
Every day you come in and there's something new going up. It's really moving on. It's really moving on quick. And for the boys of the 18s, probably for the best part of the last nine months to a year, we've trained on the 3G because come winter time, the pitches down the far end just end up getting waterlogged just because of the slope on them. So it's and now you walk over there and the pitch is perfect. So the last few weeks we've been training on the grass and the boys are happy, and as good as the 3G is, it's always nice to play on the grass.
Obviously the facilities now that we're creating are fantastic. I think the investment that's gone into Colney now it was needed, but it's exciting. It's added a lot of energy to the staff and the players, and it's an enjoyable time to be in around the academy.
We're fortunate enough to visit quite a few places. We went over to Germany, obviously, and see some of what they've done with their stuff. So And I think it's just a practical element to it all. It's going to be nice, it's going to be new, but very practical.
My job is to develop players for Matt. So if you look at that, we've got five working with him. So I think the way we're doing it now is working. And you look, you know, beyond that, you know, your Adam Iders and your Spiros, Anthony Spiro is doing really well. And then you look at Max as well. So yeah, the performance is what we're looking for, not necessarily the result.
Well, when I came in, I thought we had good players. You know, and I think, you know, there was certain things a culture you're trying to get into place, and I think it was a culture sort of come from Delia, to be fair. She, you know, my very first meeting with her in the first week was about, listen, we need to get young players in the team. I feel that we can do it. We owe it to Norfolk, we owe it to the area. Second thing is create an opportunity, and it's amazing you create an opportunity what all people do. So I think not everyone has found it easy, you know, because we've, you know, your head's above the parapet a little bit. There's been a change in culture, a change in sort of, I suppose, going away from the team ethos at the academy, going towards individual players, of which you're now starting to see some of the fruits of that. So it's not been easy for Max. It's certainly not been easy for Todd. You know, we sent him to Holland, go and grow up, and probably with a little bit of resistance. You know, it's probably something that this club's probably not done before in terms of sending too many lads out on loan, but it's something that we're determined to continue. It's about a future in the game.
It's what we're all here for, is to help that player get through the academy, get through that journey, and ultimately end up in our first team or somebody else's. So that's where we're all working towards, and we've had a little bit of success lately, so we need to continue that.
Well, there we go. Now, gents, you are both Norwich fans. You obviously looking at what's happening at Colney. Are you bothered by it? And I know that's a pretty brutal question, but, you know, with the first team and those sort of issues, where does how good Norwich's training ground sit?
No, it's really important. That is the unique thing that we've got about the club. Not the only one, but is the fact that in being a Category 1 academy, puts us in, I think, about the top 20 or 25 of it. There are only that number in the country, and the ability that gives us to unlock talent and develop talent from across the UK and probably overseas as well, that's kind of just stacks the odds in our favour for future. There's so many peer clubs in the Championship that haven't got that ability, so yeah, it really is important about just kind of future proofing us a little bit.
I mean, certainly I don't think there's any real debate over Norwich wanting Cat 1 status and to keep it. I think that seems to be really clear on that. It's a £5 million project that they've raised money through the fans. It's apparently on budget, ahead of schedule, although we've got the winter to come, obviously. But and I was really impressed walking around, because it's quite an impressive facility. And you would imagine, say, Stuart Webber wandering around with a new signing in January saying, this is where you're going to train. There's the start of a pride in terms of where they'll be working, which I guess maybe hasn't been around the place in recent years.
No, under McNally, I think it was said, you know, when you got new players coming in, taking them up to Colney, it wasn't a great... This is where they spend all the time. It's not Carrow Road. They only spend two or three hours there a week. It's Colney, you know, and that needs to be state of the art or a lot better than it was. And yes, we all say that this should have been done when we was in the Premier League, and yes, £5 million in the Premier League wouldn't have been much, and it would have been a lot further forward. But hey, we are where we are. It's a great project, it needed doing, and yeah, when players come up and they see what's going on, they go, great, you know, fantastic.
Are you gents sensing a little bit more patient as well in the fan base with the younger players, say maybe compared to last season? And I mean, we know some of the stick that Josh and Jacob Murphy got. I appreciate that they were, you know, going on 22, 23 by the time they're gone, but there does seem a real patience with Jamal and Jamal Lewis and Max Ahrens, especially at the moment.
Yeah, because these boys are very young, aren't they? What, 20 and 18, is it the other two? Yeah, and, you know, they're very, really young lads, and you just, fans cannot get, you know, they are going to make mistakes. They're only human, and also they're young, they're learning, so you just can't get on their back. You just got to encourage these boys, you know, because these are fantastic, and hence the new contracts. These boys are going places.
Yeah, totally agree, but they're just earning the plaudits by what they're doing on the pitch. We're not in a position really where we have to give them space or allow for them, because they are turning in performances. You know, it's a luxury. We can't expect that one with every youngster that gets a chance, but at the moment it just again leaves you thinking a little bit. You know, we've gone through a generation where we had quite a lot of money in the Premier League. We had high wage players in the Championship only a couple of years ago. And we weren't able to give young people a chance like that now. And you think there's probably quite a few that maybe deserved a chance, but we were kind of, the mentality at the time was stick with what you know. And, you know, it's quite a refreshing change now.
Very true, it's very true. And speaking of players on maybe high contracts who are slightly older, a lot of Nelson Oliveira chat now on the feed after we brought him up slightly earlier. So you can see that if you want to go through it, because I'm not going to go through every question and answer. But let's have a look at the other things. I mean, Liz Howlett adds in, I would like to see Nelson Oliveira on the bench as a super sub. Just wish Farker would use subs earlier, although he is getting better. So there we go. Craig Brown, what's the Canaries bond scheme? The idea that Tom Smith came up with. That does seem to be the logic now, and the suggestion, Tom Smith's idea, which of course helped. It was his idea. Came up with a way of raising £5 million. Hopefully I'll do something similar myself. That'd be quite handy. There we go. Paul Langshaw, surely the training academy is a vital part of our financial survival. That is certainly the idea. Now, Neville, you let on during one of the VTs that you were in an interesting meeting last night about atmosphere.
It's the atmosphere meeting that we've been having with the club, probably not as often as we should do. It's been happening every 12 months at the moment. With members from the club, stadium manager Danny Casey, the ticket office, Zoe Callaghan Bates, Gemma Gifford, and Joe Ferrari, and the two guys that do the music and then announcing. So there's a lot of staff from the club, and there was fans from obviously Force Canaries, Canaries Trust, Proud Canaries, and then fans from different stands and different age groups as well. So hopefully everyone was covered, and it was, yeah.
Did you come up with an answer?
No. You know, Bartley and Norwich and along come Norwich, they're the groups getting with the flags and that. And yes, communication with the club, how to move things forward needs to be better on both sides. And that was agreed at the meeting. And Andy Lawn came with some new flags and that.
He loves his flags, Andy Lawn, friend of the show.
Much bigger flags than what we've got.
I mean, it does, I guess the fact that there is this open dialogue about it does, you know, bode well in terms of making the issue less of an issue.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You know, people knock the club and that, but at least when you're talking that, you're talking about the things that matter and how to sort them out. And yeah, it does take time, but we're getting there slowly. And yeah, we talked. I asked them about safe standing. Does the position of the club still remain the same that now that Steve Stone's left the club? And the answer was yes, nothing's changed on that. So, which is good to hear. Found out about the cost of safe standing, how much it would cost, just rails or rail seats. And there's a difference of about £500,000 between the two. Yes.
That'll be your next bond issue right there.
Yes, I think that might be the next one. Yes.
After the Bailey bond, yeah?
Yes. Hopefully, if I get in there in time. Brilliant stuff, Neville. Well, keep us in the loop on that as well. Write a list. Right, just another message from Liz Howlett adding about the academy at Colney. It's not just vital for financial survival, it's vital for selling. Until we become an established Premier League side, Norwich will become a feeder club. Sell to buy. There we go. We'll see how things progress.
We've always sold. It's, you know, we're not big enough to. Yeah, no, we've always sold players. It's just when you do it and how much you get for them, isn't it? You know, and that's the critical thing.
Spot on, Nev. Right. Okay. The Championship kicks back into life this weekend. Here's how it's all looking. Bristol City's poor turn in form leaves them now in the bottom half, while Dean Smith joins Aston Villa as boss 8 places below Brentford in the Championship ladder. Ipswich and Preston have spent the international break in the bottom 3 despite winning their most recent outing. And we now get to go to the top half second. That's because it's where we find Daniel Farke's Canaries, albeit only just. They face the sides currently 5th, 6th and 7th. Over the next fortnight, Sheffield United lead the way, but the pack promises to be tighter compared to last season. So this weekend kicks off with a cracker at Hillsborough, while Saturday sees more of the same as Leeds open at Blackburn and Frank Lampard's Derby host the leaders in the late kickoff. QPR are the favourable visitors to Ipswich, while Norwich, of course, head to the side just below them in the form table, Nottingham Forest. There is also a full midweek programme to follow, with Villa coming to Carrow Road on the Tuesday. It's a tougher assignment for Ipswich as they head to Elland Road, while Inform West Brom host Frank Lampard's Derby. No, every time I write Derby, it's not lazy. In fact, it's the opposite to lazy, because it's two extra words. When you look at the table, gents, do you think it's starting to take shape? And also, does that mean we can start getting a little bit more excited about Norwich's season, Chris?
I'm definitely more optimistic now than I was pre-season. Pre-season, if you'd asked me about the chances of being top six playoff positions, I'd have said pretty long shot. I think we've proven now that that's a possibility. But it also shows that there's still at least half the division think the same as we do.
It is always the fun of the Championship, isn't it?
Yeah, I did pre-season. I enjoyed that. Came back. Always said top half, where we are now, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I'd be happy with that, considering where. But at the moment, yeah, we're going through a good patch. Let's just see where we are once we start again, and we don't have that slump like we did last season.
Yes, indeed. I think there are probably stats that say October is generally pretty horrendous for Norwich. So
September was our
golden month.
It's a golden month in the last four, five seasons.
One defeat in the last four Septembers, and that being when Norwich were 3-1 up at 3-2 up at Newcastle with 80 seconds of injury time to go. Yeah, still can't shake it off. It'll be interesting what happens with Brentford and Villa now, won't it? Because, Dean Smith is clearly a Brummie and he'll love going to Villa, but take away the sentiment and the emotion from it, that's quite a brave call, really.
And there's still that huge sense of anticipation and expectation around Aston Villa and their fan base that they've got to get promoted. And I'm sure they'll love having one of their own, as they call him, now leading the way. But it doesn't change the squad today from what it was yesterday.
And, even at Brentford, Dean Smith, it took him a year to get going. I mean, they really struggled with his when he was in charge for that first year. And likewise, he was building something really progressive. There's nothing to say that they couldn't have gone up automatically this season.
Yeah, but, ambitious. He's obviously an ambitious guy, and you can see why he's done it. But, yeah, Brentford were going places. And did John Terry join him?
He was the assistant whoever came in, I imagine.
Really?
Probably. I don't know that for a fact. Finally, will Ipswich pull away from the bottom three? They won their last game.
No.
I hate to say it, but yes, I think I'm talking the whole season now, they will avoid a relegation. Not that I want them to, but I just think they will.
See, we're so objective here on the Pinkin Show. City appear to have survived the international break. Jamal Lewis had a slip for Northern Ireland, of course, apart. I guess we're hoping that the Stoke defeat doesn't sort of linger now, really, aren't we? It's, as you've already mentioned, what happened last year. Ultimately, I get the feeling that the weight of that good run in September has kind of seen them through despite losing the game against Stoke, and given the way they played in that game, I suppose.
It gives us time to take stock, and so some of the players have been busy and have got a lot more miles as well as minutes into them, but it gives everyone behind the scenes a chance to just reflect a little bit on, it's such a compressed period of time before this break came of two games a week, non-stop. I think it kind of showed in the fact that we kept going same again. It needed freshening up, I think, before the Stoke game. And I'd like to see a bit of freshening up coming ahead now.
Oh, hold that thought, Chris. Hold that thought. Nottingham Forest are an interesting one for me, because last year they had a really young team and they were building something really nice. I can't remember who was in charge of them at that point, but they had some really young players, Ben Brereton and Tom Cash, and some looking like, keep this lot together for 3 years maybe and we'll see what you develop. And then Ita Karanka comes in and it's like, right, we're going to throw all the money at it. We like what Wolves did, so we're going to try that. So some of those players have been sold, but they're doing quite well this year, and they'll be hoping that this is their season to finally return to the big time. It's been a long time for a club with the history, I suppose, of Forest.
Yeah, let's not talk about history. There's a lot down the road talk about history a lot. But yeah, they're chucking money at it. Yeah, Wolves did it very well last season. And we'll see how Forest get on. Where are they? They're fifth in the league on 19 points. But I don't know. As Chris said, there's so many teams. And there must be 18 teams in that division that have been in the Premier League and who probably think, well, we should be back in the Premier League. So, whether they'll be there at the end of the season, I don't think they'll be in the top two. I think they'll be in the playoffs probably, but along with us, hopefully.
That's the spirit, Nev. Love it. Right, let's have a look at your 11s. Who you would pick if you were Daniel Farke. And they're quite settled. You can always tell when things are going well because the teams are settled. Who should we go for first? Nev. take us through your 11. It's not going to take long.
No, I just think, you know, that these players that I've picked, Apuki up front is probably the only doubt if his hamstring. Can I just tell a little story about this? Mate of mine was at the game where he scored, and he said he was rubbish.
Which game? The Finland game, the first one.
Yeah, the first game where he scored. Like, and he said, and I said, oh, great, you know, this was on Facebook. He said, he was rubbish, he did nothing all game. So he scored the goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he was slagging him off, and he reckons that the player that he's probably replaced that went to Hearts is far better than him.
Okay.
So we had an interesting chat about that. So he rates, and thank you very much for Naismith, is what he said. But anyway, Cantwell, Steveman, Hernandez, Leighton, and Tetti. Yeah, I just think that those guys do the job and have been doing the job. I know Chris said about freshening it up, but I think just Pukki up front, maybe Hernandez, and then the back four, Lewis and Aaron's. Good to see Lewis making a mistake when he's on international duty. Do that while you're not playing for Norwich. Happy with that. And Zimmerman, you know, or Zim the man, as I like to call him, or the main man, you know.
I just assumed that was a typo when you
said
that.
No, I did it on purpose. It meant to be Zim the main man, but yeah, so I think I'm just perfectly happy with that 11 for me.
Good stuff. And you have dropped Emi Buendia.
Yes, I did, yes. I just felt... being some of the away games, he's just struggling a little bit when it came to the end, and maybe he's one of these that needs an rest. Assuming that Hernandez is fully fit and ready to go, then yeah, bring him. And I think he's a class act, but I think, you know, he is just needs a rest now and again, you know.
Chris, let's have a look at yours. Although I noticed that I've the perceptive people will see that number 22 should of course be Taemu Pukki, not the second Marco Stiepermann, although he's played like two players at times this season. So if you can forgive my error there, that's pretty much your team.
Yeah, so I'm sure lots of people think I'm stark raving mad by not having Teemu Pukki up front, and I can kind of see exactly where they're coming from if they do think that. My rationale for this is at the start of the season, I really liked it when we had Teemu playing just behind and supporting Jordan, and I kind of think as the season progresses, there's games where we're going to want them both on the pitch. I think it puts a huge onus on Teemu Pukki being up front, doing all the legwork. And he's got that creative part to his game as well that I think could work really well with Jordan Rhodes. And so I guess I'd like to see both of them in the starting 11. And the way to do that really is to have Jordan up top, Teemu behind him somewhere. I kind of toyed almost for this Saturday as a tactical thing, thinking actually should we just put Teemu on the bench really, which might happen through injuries anyway. But I'm just mindful of the fact that we don't want him to go and suddenly do a hamstring and be out for 5 weeks if he's on the point of kind of breaking down now. And the one I'd have bring in then at that point would probably be Hernandez if I was going to mix it up, as Nev's done in his selection.
It's interesting, obviously Jordan Rhodes just becoming a dad. I don't know how long you get as paternity leave as a footballer, but by all accounts it's not much. But just how, you know, might be a bit bleary eyed. I think we all know what it's like,
isn't it? Yeah, you know, well, yeah. And we'll move house for a couple of days.
Move house, move out. Yeah, leave Emma to it. And interesting as well, because we haven't really probably had to contemplate this. Grant Hanley, I would imagine, is very close to being back now. Does he come in or does he have to wait?
Well, how do you? I wouldn't put him in now because at the moment it's working fine. You know, if it isn't broken, don't try and mess with it. You know, so. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, because he started off, he had a couple of dodgy games, didn't he? And then he was just a rock solid at the back there, you know. He had his head on everything. He was putting the tackles in, and then he gets injured. But that's the point of the squad, isn't it? He's come in, these two are doing the job. So I'm afraid he has to wait his turn now, surely.
Rufus?
I'd get him back in.
Oh, love it.
Rufus, but I'd say to Zim the main man, brilliant job, but sorry.
Love it. And that's why we talk about football a lot, isn't it? Brilliant. Let's just have a couple more of your messages, shall we? Neil Luther, I'm proud of the club and feel it is there is heading in a real direction, plan and new identity with Norwich driving young talented players over established players. Joe McKenzie, all clubs sell, even Liverpool. If we have to, it's an important part of the football business. That's Paul Langshaw's verdict. And Mark Butty says, good on you, Nev. I don't know why, but good on you, Nev.
Cheers, Mark. Cheers, mate. Yeah, he's good. One of our members lives down in near Brighton and just started playing walking football. He's loving it, apparently.
I'm looking, you know, I fancy a bit of walking football. I think I could. All right. That is it. So one more question, because we've got Forest and Villa coming up. I want a key man for both of those games, not one, just one key man, and then predictions for the games. Nev?
I'll go to Chris.
Well, based on my selection, I'm going to say Jordan Rhodes, because I think he's key to a successful season this season for Norwich. If we sneak the playoffs, it's going to be based around Jordan Rhodes getting 12 or 15 goals, as well as Timu. So, Jordan Rhodes.
What are we talking about? Both games? Or?
Yeah, just one.
Well, first game, I think Stieperman and Hernandez for the Villa game.
Love it. Why not? And predictions then?
I'm going to go for draw for both games.
One. Points from six.
Yeah, well, because, you know, Forest are having a good streak, and I don't know, just Villa sometimes. I wouldn't say they're a bogey team, but I'll just take a draw those two games at the moment.
How many points, Chris, from the two games?
I'd take four, draw away, win at home. I think that'd be a great haul.
And there we go. David Whitby. I feel Norwich will score more goals if they keep passing the ball quicker, especially in the first half against Stoke. It has improved. Someone will get a tucking up soon. I'm glad you wrote that, David. I was a little bit worried. That is it from us for tonight. Remember, you can catch this show and all our superb Norwich City content over at the Pinken Facebook page and the YouTube channel. But of course, first and foremost, pinken.com. I will be at the City Ground on Saturday alongside Paddy Davitt and David Freezer, as well as Carrow Road on Tuesday for Villa's visit. So make sure you keep tabs on pinken.com for all our build-up team news, live coverage, reaction and analysis during a busy week. And if you see us around, please make sure you say hello. We will be back here live again as well next Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. live from the Woolpack on Golden Ball Street in the centre of Norwich for another Pinken show with all the fallout from those games. So please join us then, be it in the flesh here, Dan will get you a drink, or online. And remember, if you want us to come to your local, be it pub, cafe, restaurant, chilling room, swimming pool, we'd probably do that. Or if you want to be one of our fan pundits, then simply send us an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk and we'll do the rest. You'd think that would be easy to read out, but obviously not. In the meantime, a big thank you to our guests tonight, to Chris and to Neville. Thank you very much, gents. Much appreciated. To the Woolpack for hosting us, of course. To the crew, who is Dan once again. Thanks, Dan.
Well done, Dan.
You didn't boo Ipswich, though. Lost your way there. And of course, to you guys for watching and getting involved. We really appreciate it. We'll see you again next week. Until then, let's hope City fell the villains and the Forest, and we don't have to ditch the feel good just yet. Good night.